Hello and good evening. Welcome to Ever Beyond. We are having a very special evening tonight with combined with the United We Strike Marathon. We're going to welcome on our show Mr. Kevin Arnett from Canada, and he'll be we'll be discussing amongst other things the situation that happens with the children in churches, and many other subjects. So, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Kevin Arnett. And
Patterson as well. Hello, yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you.
First of all, alert people to a couple of websites people can follow our work. ITCCS.org, that's the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, ITCCS.org. Also, a lot of the evidence we'll be talking about is posted online at hiddennolonger.com. Basically, what we're involved with now, and it's coinciding with the United We Strike event on April 15th, a couple of weeks prior to that, on April 1st and 8th, there's a movement called Occupy the Vatican. And they are going to be confronting the Catholic Church, including through church occupations, other events, to highlight the fact that the Vatican is engaged in crimes against humanity, the systematic cover-up of the rape and trafficking of children. And we're part of the movement to expose that. And this is, of course, related to the genocide that's happened here and all over the world against Native people. So that's kind of our general interest. And we also want to talk about things related to how is it that the Vatican can operate under this false jurisdiction where it pretends to be a state and has the protection of government in that to do these crimes.
That is absolutely right up my street. It's been one of the subjects that we talk about on Wolf Spirit Radio. I suppose one of the things that brings us together is the experience of trauma here. Most of the hosts here have been through some kind of difficult time in their life, let's put it that way, be they MK Ultra or just any old thing, and according to our last guest, just being born a Jewish baby, it subjects you to enough trauma-based mind control for the rest of your life, so I don't know. Anyway, but also my father was a French-Canadian Catholic boy, and I'm absolutely sure that, you know, he showed a lot of odd signs. I think there, you know, there was something that went on there in his early life as well. So it's a subject very close to my heart, and I've looked at the Catholic Church, and as far as I'm concerned, the Catholic Church is not a church; it's the Roman Empire, just with a cloak around.
Yeah, definitely. That's it.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well that we can tie the Vatican into the whole expose of corporations as well. It's easy to argue that the Vatican is the oldest and largest corporation still existent on the planet, and they've really set the model for how other corporations are both structured and how they behave. And so it's interesting, Kevin can talk about his experience in New York last week being down at Occupy Wall Street, when the feeling was, well, you know, what happens in with regard to genocide and children and so on isn't really our issue, and they've completely missed the connection between really putting this all together and looking at the Vatican more as a corporation, as a for-profit banking and control system, in the guise of religion and spiritual upliftment.
Well, that's really important what Andrew just said, because a lot of the power of the church is psychological. People think for some reason it's a religious organization, and it clearly isn't. Not only for the obvious fact that it's openly violating the most basic teachings of its supposed founder, when we know in fact that it wasn't Jesus who founded the Catholic Church, it was the Roman Emperor Constantine, and in 317 he made the Church of Rome a legal corporation, bound to the state, and of course they inherited the empire. You know, this is being written about a lot. People know that even the terms and the language used in the Catholic Church are all derived from the Roman Empire. But you know, an example of how they're a power unto themselves is if people go to hiddennolonger.com, my book, and then look in one of the appendices, we reproduce a law called Crimen Solicitanus, and it's a Latin word meaning the crime of solicitation. And it's canon law formulated in 1962, partly by the present Pope, Joseph Ratzinger. And it states that when a child is raped or harmed in the Catholic Church anywhere in the world, the priest and the bishop are under papal order to cover up that crime, not tell the police, and silence the victim, or they'll face excommunication. So, I mean, it's a criminal conspiracy to protect child rapists, yet they get away with that. So the question is, why and how does that happen?
Well, they write the laws, don't they? I mean, if you look at a law, what's it written in? It's written in Latin. Everything's written in Latin back to the Roman Empire. So the problem is, how do we deal with the Roman Empire? How do we cripple it? Because it's now spread all over the world. It's spread to London and spread to Washington, and it's just ruining us all. How do we do that?
Well, you know,
I know that's a big question.
Yeah, it is the big question. And what I'm encouraged by is how many people are waking up now. I do a lot of traveling all over North America and Europe, and the last time I was over in Europe, everywhere I went, people were saying exactly what we're saying now. And the question is then, how do people take action? The tribunals that have been set up to look into these crimes are utter whitewashes. You can't go the legal kind of establishment route on this stuff, because right where I'm speaking from on Vancouver Island, the government is now conducting these so-called hearings into what happened in these Indian boarding schools. But you're not allowed to name names. You're not allowed to talk about wrongdoing. You can't bring charges against the churches. They're being completely indemnified for causing the death of over 50,000 children in Canada. So obviously we have to go our own route. We've got to take direct action against the churches and governments responsible, and that's what people are doing with this Occupy the Vatican movement.
And I think the question of what to do is not that difficult. What to do is really quite obvious. None of this happens or exists without our support and consent. So obviously we withdraw support and consent. What does that mean? Well, consent simply means saying no and doing it vociferously, be it in writing and notices or however it's done. And then support is simply withdrawing our labor from supporting any aspect of it to the best of our ability. So it's not the what to do that's really the difficulty. I think anyone who gives it a moment's thought can come up with those answers. The real question is, what stops people from doing it? Mm-hmm. What's the barrier? And this is the psychological aspect. This is back to the mind control. The very meaning of government, govern, to control or regulate, mentees, the mind. It's mind control. They you know, there's honesty in advertising. They tell you exactly what they're doing to your mind. They're controlling it. So that's the issue, is how do you flip that switch from allowing somebody else to control the mind to saying, wait a minute, I can do this for myself. I don't have to be a robot. I don't have to be a predictable programmed machine, you know, stimulus in, response out. In fact, we can do this for ourselves. We can think and motivate and act for ourselves. So that's the big question. Yeah, how do we flip that switch?
That's it, yeah.
That's a good question. So again, we're kind of entrenched within its own model. We're trying to work out how to defeat the Roman Empire from inside the cage of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But really what we need to do is, because, you know, like you say, it's a government of the mind. It's governing of the mind. And it's a something that, it's so big. It's always existed, as far as we're concerned. I mean, if this thing exists for 2,000 years, if some people say it was only 1,000, but if this thing has existed for 1,000 years, then we are so it surrounds us. You know, I just keep hearing the sound of Morpheus. You know, the Matrix is all around us. It's where you breathe, pay your taxes. You know, all of these things. The whole idea of a civilization that runs off the taxation to the people. That's a meme. It's not true. It doesn't have to happen that way. You know, we don't need a religion to govern how we believe. You know, we don't need a policeman to tell us to behave ourselves. We don't need a license to do as we will in any way, shape, or form. I don't need a license to drive. I don't need a license to get married.
Right.
I don't need a license to have a relationship. I don't need permission from any institution to love someone. which is essentially right, what well, marriage I mean, was. You know, this is where I'm getting it. To. This is the heart of the matter.
Yeah, and it applies to the church, especially in organized religion, because they rely totally on not just implied consent of the majority of people, but they have actual arrangements with governments all over the world. They're called financial concordats. They exist between the Vatican and most of the governments of the world. Just in 2010, Spain paid 260 million euros directly to the Vatican Bank out of taxpayers' money. These financial concordats are secret. Politicians are not allowed to reveal their contents. And, you know, it raises the whole question of there is no distinction between church and state. They operate as one entity. And that's the thing to realize about this.
Well, church, state, and army. And also, you know, now you then, okay, so I bring in the military, and the military have got a lot to do with the actual carrying out of the satanic rituals. They're the one that abduct the people and take the children and all of that stuff, you know. That's part of what black ops do, and the black ops are funded by the drug running, which also is destroying our people. You know, there's all these different things that they're doing, you know, they're doing it all at the same time. And it's such an enormous lie that everything's fine, you know, you're being looked after by, you're being protected by the army, you're being looked after by the government. No, it's the other way around, you know, you're being destroyed by these people, these parasites. So anyway, sorry.
I don't know where you're made, you know, the body of your audience is on the show today, but if people want a recent example of that and just how far down the rabbit hole this goes, because really what we're talking about here is, you know, when people get the opportunity to take the red pill or the blue pill, if we're going to keep using the Matrix analogy, you know, here's down the rabbit hole with Colonel Russell Williams. And
oh, yes.
Okay.
He's the flyer?
He was a pilot.
Yeah.
Okay. He was a pilot for the Governor General, the personal pilot to Governor General Romeo LeBlanc.
Of Canada,
the Queen's representative in Canada. He was also the private pilot for Her Majesty the Queen and her husband, the Duke of Edinburgh, when they were in Canada. Very interesting background. He was also a college buddy of Paul Bernardo, another famous maker of snuff movies, with his wife Carla Hamalka. The fact that these two were associated in the past, you know, should be of enormous interest. But here's what happened. He was convicted. In fact, he pled guilty to 2 counts of murder, 2 counts of rape, 4 different women. And also, I believe, 82 counts of breaking and entering, where he would go into young girls' bedrooms and then model their underwear for himself. He took pictures of himself dressed in panties and bra several times and kept those as souvenirs of his B&Es. Here's the interesting thing. When he was in jail facing these charges, he started a little 3-day hunger strike where he essentially agreed to plead guilty to those 4 serious charges and the 82 charges of B&E, which are also serious, by the way. Breaking and entering carries a life sentence in Canada. He agreed to plead guilty to those charges in exchange for, here's the deal he cut with the Crown Prosecutor, in exchange for there being no charges and no investigation of all the child porn that he had on his on his computer. And in fact, as far as I know, all that evidence has been destroyed. The day after his conviction, the forces came in and burned all his uniforms, which they said was to cover up the disgrace of the man, but it's the first time that's happened. An alternative explanation for that is that they were despoiling evidence, that his uniforms contained DNA of people that he associated with, and some of whom are almost certainly now dead. And no investigation of child porn. Here's the question. How does that serve the public interest? That's the question to the Crown Prosecution. How does that serve the public interest, not looking into more serious crimes involving children?
Well, and the other thing, too, is in Canada now, the Mulroney government, or Mulroney, I'm sorry, another Tory, infamous Tory, the Harper government, just a few months ago, changed the criminal code, making it more of an offense to own a pot plant, marijuana, than it is to rape a child. There's a mandatory sentence of 2 to 5 years for owning pot, 1 year mandatory sentence for raping a child, if you can believe it. And in fact, we just had a case in Chilliwack a few weeks ago, this is near Vancouver, where a man was charged with serially raping 2 children over 500 times possession of firearms, the Crown recommended 1 year in jail. Now, that's normal in Canada for child rape.
Well, let's go deep down into this rabbit hole, because I think this is unnecessary, but I do warn, this is a very graphic and disturbing story. So I just want to put the disclaimer there. I know it's a kind of multicast, but this is hardcore truth of what is going on behind the scenes, and this goes all the way to all of the established institutions, government institutions of Britain, Canada, United States, and probably beyond. So let's take a deep breath, because this is going to get a bit intense. Let's talk about Russell Williams and the Picton Pig Farm, shall we?
Yeah.
So,
Go ahead. Do you want to give a intro on that?
Yeah. My source for this information is David Hawkins and Field McConnell, but mostly David Hawkins. He's a really incredible researcher into the... this all comes from the shenanigans behind the 9/11 false flag event, let's put it that way, and the discovery that it's just one of many with a particular modus operandi, and it goes all the way to Oxford University and Cambridge and all of that. So given the global scale of this information, now we've got an idea of where it is. Let's drill down into this one tiny aspect of it, of which there are many, and I also want to talk about a few of those. But it is hardcore, so be warned. So from what I've learned from David Hawkins is that there is a... I think it was, is it in the Vancouver district? It's nearer.
It's just east of Vancouver. That Dave Picton and his brothers ran a snuff film operation just about 20 miles east of Vancouver.
Okay,
and,
So here's what would happen. There would be a party, and people would be invited from all echelons of life. The party scene people and the local politicians and anybody else who might be visiting the area. These people were procured, I believe, by Russell Williams and et al. And they were taken to the the Porky Palace or something?
Piggy's Palace, they called it. It was one of the Picton-owned farms in Coquitlam, British Columbia. Yeah, and that's where they did the snuff films and other things. I had a program on Vancouver Co-op Radio. It was canceled soon after we began to bring this information out. And Native women who I work with saw, were eyewitnesses to this fact that Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers were the ones bringing the Native women to the Picton farm.
That's it.
And... again, at the back of my book, HiddenNoLonger.com, we have statements from a number of people, including Annie Parker, who was a woman taken out there. And she said definitely the police were involved in this. And, she named Canadian military personnel and others who were using this facility, making these snuff films and doing other things.
Okay, so what's going on here is, like, people are invited to this party, and there's everything available. So if you want, you know, the procurer will get you anything. So if you like cocaine, they'll get you cocaine. If you like marijuana, they'll get you joints. If you like little boys, they'll get you little boys. If you like little girls, they'll get you little girls. If you like women, they'll get you women. If you like, you know, all of this stuff, whatever you wanted to make you happy, whatever you think is a party. And they would bring in some very top echelon people. And particularly new people who would be coming into the scene, because it was a great little party. Everybody's having a great time. But at a certain time, this is where it gets graphic. A Hell's Angel will come out of the back. There's a girl dancing on the stage, and a Hell's Angel will come out of the back and attack at her with the chainsaw and literally cut her to death with the chainsaw on stage, with all of these people looking. This event is filmed alongside all of the people who attended. And after this thing happens, they go back home, and a couple of weeks later, they get a picture of them having a good time while this woman is being mutilated behind them. And at that point, they're compromised. And that's happened to just about everybody who you might see in the political sphere, and no doubt in the military sphere. How are we doing so far?
Well, yeah, that's accurate. In fact, you know, CIA, for example, use the same methods around the world. That's one of the reasons the CIA, and they've admitted this, are involved to some degree in child trafficking and the drug trade, of course, we know all over the world. But the interesting thing about what's happened in the wake of the whole PICNA thing, the government in British Columbia was forced to do their own self-inquiry into this. And most of the native groups that were involved, a lot of the victims were Aboriginal women. The native families and their lawyers have dropped out of this inquiry because they say it's such a sham. But one of the things that was what happened was a native man came to me with evidence that the Picton brothers were dropping off remains of something in bags on the various spots around Vancouver, including the Musqueam Indian Reservation. He had these remains analyzed. His name's Les Guerin. He had these remains analyzed, and he found that, sure enough, they're the remains of women and pigs mixed together. He went to the police. He went to all the media. Nobody would touch this stuff. So it was clearly part of a bigger operation that is being very effectively concealed, and as in the case of this Russell Williams, right.
Okay.
Well, that's right, because this then ties into, if you want to go deeper with it, and again, based on the research at AbleDanger.net, Hawkins and McConnell that you're talking about, and they're tying this back to the events of September 11th, 2001, that
among others,
Russell Williams was involved in that. And the reason that Piggy's Palace was used heavily in the mid-90s, sort of 96, 97, was to compromise people ahead of the event, because obviously a cover-up of that scale, you need people in many different positions, and you need to know that those people are going to do precisely what they're told. So this was the reason behind entrapping so many people, not just simply, you know, bringing in certain elements of the agenda, but bringing in, you know, the big one, if you will, that, from which everything else that we see has flowed.
So, and the picture is expanding. So what they're doing is they have the people on in their compromise folders. Now, the videos of these things, right, there's an editing suite. Like you said, it's a snuff film movie studio there, and they have all the studio equipment that is run by military commanders. Now, there's this is not getting rid, and it sounds like something out of James Bond. How much do you know, Kevin, about FemComp Inc., a group of military lesbian females who have been compromised in this manner, and who take part in this ritual, essentially, what we're talking about at the Pig to Pig Farm, and no doubt it hasn't stopped and it's just moved places.
No, I hadn't heard about that particular group. You know, like you say, there's all sorts of layers to this, and one of the layers that I wanted to mention too related to the Picton Farm is the Native women who were being targeted. And I know I've worked on the streets of Vancouver for over 20 years as a community minister, and I knew a number of these women who went missing. What we found after a while, we had our own community task force into missing people documenting this, and we found that a lot of these women who were disappearing were traditional women. In other words, they were related to the families who wouldn't get off their land. They wouldn't sign treaties with the government. They're being targeted as well. You know, a lot of this genocide that's ongoing is still targeted at natives who are refusing to leave their land because Canada is sitting on more oil than Saudi Arabia, the hydroelectric power, the uranium that feeds the depleted uranium for the military in the U.S. All of this is coming from not only Canada, but land still occupied by native people. So the native elders, the traditionalists, are being targeted for extermination, and that's a lot of these women are getting killed off. So there's that whole dimension as well we have to look at.
Wow.
In fact, I'd like to go further with that and point out that what we're talking about is genocide. In Canada, most people will deny that there has been any genocide whatsoever. And by genocide, you know, just that, the classic definition that we've been offered up. And most of that not only the physical genocide, but the psychological genocide. The question I ask is, what's the purpose of genocide? And to cut straight to the chase, it's to steal, it's theft. The theft of resources, the theft of the land that has the resources, and the extermination of the people that have original title to get them out of the way. And so that's exactly what Kevin is getting at, is this genocide is ongoing. And one of the reasons, of course, that, you know, it's not what to do. The what to do is pretty simple. What stops people, if you look at Canada, who are the people who are benefiting from this? Well, anybody associated with the Canadian government, the provincial governments, the municipal governments, the logging companies, the mining companies, the three major churches, mm-hmm. every hockey team. By the time you're done, you've got a handful of people you can fit into one hockey arena who are not somehow benefiting from this genocide. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. To admit to this is to admit that we're living on stolen land and benefiting from stolen resources, and we've killed anyone who's got in the way, especially the brown people.
This is a subject that is very close to the hearts of the Wolf Spirit team and listeners as well. And we have been talking with many elders here on the station, on Thomas's show in particular, with various chiefs who are working on the legal retaking of the... because they're working from the treaties. Do you know anything about the Camel's Eye Treaty of 408 AD?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Well, we've got a few shows on it on the on Wolf Spirit Radio archives, and we've also got a copy of the treaty in the wolfspiritradio.com website.
Okay.
It's basically it's the claimed title of the Americas by the Native Americans. Apparently, all of the world did it. You know, they had this great big treaty in 408 AD, and basically the treaty has been broken again and again and again. And every treaty that the West has made with the red man has been broken. So let's not say the West.
Well, deliberately, because. What people often don't realize is, and they wouldn't because this is never taught anywhere, but the Pope claimed and the Vatican claimed to own the entire world and had the right to take it away from anybody they wanted. It was called the doctrine of unum sanctum. And all the papal laws that came in saying that non-Christians didn't have the right to their own land, all of that flowed from that simple idea that one man claimed to own the whole earth and all roads lead to Rome. On this genocide. I mean, they brought in the legal and the moral justification for everything that's happened and is still going on. So that's why we're saying this Occupy the Vatican movement is very important, because we're saying, you know, around the world, people are saying it's time to do things like, if you know of a priest who's a known child rapist, go in and publicly defrock the guy, strip him of his robes and throw him out of the church. You know, refuse to pay any money to these churches, demand governments cancel the charitable tax status. You know, again, maybe that's utopian because they work hand in glove with these guys, but at least raising the fact that these churches do not have the right to operate in our communities anymore. And in fact, Mohawk and Squamish elders in Canada, traditionalists in the Mohawk and Squamish nations, have already issued banishment orders telling the Catholic and the Anglican and United churches to get off their land. And they're trying to enforce these banishment orders. So these are the kinds of direct actions that people need to take.
Yeah, absolutely. We've also reposted that one on the site too, of the banishment ban. That was when we first started up. That was one of the first pieces of news that I was very proud to post on the new website. You know, the banishment of the of all the churches and all the church lands and all the church buildings and everything that belongs to the, just get out. Brilliant. It's a wonderful time. I know that we're in for. A bit of a rumble, but we're all headed in the right direction, I think, it's time enough. They've had their time. It's now time for everybody else and us.
Well, it's waking up to the slavery that's being imposed on us, and we've agreed to unconsciously. I mean, people are born into this, and so they're not aware of it until they're woken up to the fact of their own inherent sovereignty and power.
Totally. I mean, again, we're almost quoting from The Matrix. You know, we're born into slavery, and it's time for us to pull those pins out of our body, and and even if it does mean getting flushed down like a toilet. I mean, it's interesting that imagery is used. You know, it's just like a toilet bowl being flushed away. And
well, that's what we want to have happen to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. We want to get out of the system, and often the best way. I know myself when I got thrown out of the United Church. That's what I often say to people. I mean, I got tossed out of my own culture for bringing this stuff up, but it's been good in the long run. It's opened my eyes to a lot more and allowed me to do a lot of this work.
That's right.
I think that's a common experience of everyone waking up as they get flushed down the toilet of their own lives.
Yeah.
Of course. In fact, I think it's inevitable. I think it's 100% common experience, certainly in my observation. So, yeah, I mean, we can use matrix analogy, you know, for the next 3 hours. Of course we can, because, you know, that's the whole purpose. They're laying it out for everyone. Here's your life.
That's right. That's right. I also want to give a quick shout out to Sister Tracy Kennedy out in Guelph, Ontario. She's another of our co-hosts, and she's been doing a major amount of the interviewing of the elders, and she's part native herself, and this treaty, this 408 treaty, was like almost like a family myth to her. It's something they told her about. It's like a fairy tale. Oh, long, long ago, we had a treaty with the Romans, and we were, we had the right claim to this land, etc. It just was like a childhood fairy story to her. Until one of the guests on our show started talking about the Camel's Eye Treaty, and she brought them on, and we've kind of uncovered this amazing thing that already exists, which declares, the Turtle Island, not America, not Canada, not Mexico, but Turtle Island, the whole thing, belongs to the red people.
Mm-hmm. That was also acknowledged in the early treaties between the Dutch and the British with the Six Nations Confederacy. It was called the Two-Row Wampum. You can look at this on our website. We have a picture of the flag. It's two vertical lines that represented the European and the indigenous cultures that were supposed to travel side by side, not dominating each other, but living in equality and sharing the land equally.
Absolutely.
And that treaty was abrogated by the Crown of England. That's why we say the false jurisdiction of the Crown on Canada is something we don't recognize anymore. We recognize the original Two-Row Wampum equality between my settler ancestors and the indigenous people. When we started doing excavations at the Mohawk School in Brantford, Ontario, when we identified graves of children murdered in the local Church of England school, we said to the RCMP, you're not allowed on this territory. It's Mohawk Nation territory, and this is under our jurisdiction. This is our crime scene. They've stayed away because they know it's true, you know. And we can say to all white Canadians, come over and join us now. You don't have to hold allegiance to the Crown of England anymore. You can ignore the government and the police and the courts. They're a false imposed jurisdiction.
Yeah. Well, and this takes us right back to that question. If we're going to use the Matrix analogy, you know, ultimately everybody has the choice whether to take the blue or the red pill. And because essentially now everybody is waking up to the fact that they now live on the reserve, and if you want to see the future, simply take a look at what life on the reserve has been like for the last 100-150 years. That's the petri dish, that was the experiment.
Yep.
And I don't mean to be disrespectful to anyone, that's how I see it. And so yes, if you want to see your future, if we don't make a change, just take a look and see what the native people have had to endure in spades, and to this very day, you know, let's look at the prison population. You know, the vast majority of people in prison are Native people, and yet they make, what, 2.5% of Canada, so grossly overrepresented. So to say the genocide has stopped in any way is self-deluding. So, yeah, that's the thing. We do get to make the choice here. You know, you were saying it's great because we all get to wake up. We all get the opportunity to wake up. Whether people take it or not, that's the free will part. That's the one choice we do get to make, is whether we decide to pay attention to what we're being offered or not. But what I see, frankly, is a split. I see a real split. And this is the time now where the fence sitting isn't going to be allowed anymore. You're going to be pushed into one camp or the other by your own choices. We all are. And so this is the point. We get to choose which pill we're going to take. What we don't get anymore is the decision to take no pill.
So that's a That is definitely the choice. I mean, you can't go. I very much doubt when people realize what taking the blue pill means. Because people have to be given the opportunity to know what the blue pill means. That it means slavery forever. And when they realize that they're able to make free will choices that don't make the world, they don't put them in prison. I think this is the whole thing. You know, people are so scared of breaking the law. Mm-hmm. You see people, and this, I mean, we're not even talking about laws here, right? Okay, so, people are so paranoid about putting their seatbelt on. I drive around here a lot.
We're not talking about breaking the law. We're talking about disobeying authority.
Exactly.
Big difference.
Yeah, and obeying rules and complying with rules that really don't make sense. So we have
no obligation to obey anything that was derived from our uninformed or coerced consent, and that's just basic natural law, right?
Yeah.
But there's something even more fundamental here, and that is that we're on the brink of major social and global disaster unless we turn away from this system that's caused all this. And it's a matter of survival now. We don't have an option anymore, like Andrew said, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. Short of something changing with consciousness, what chance do we have? I mean, let's take it to some of the disasters that we're facing. People have all but forgotten about what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, but that's far from over. You want to talk about a disaster that's just warming up, no pun intended, take a look what's going on in Japan at the Fukushima Daiichi plant and others. Without going into a lot of detail, there's a tremendous amount of work that we need to be paying attention to. Instead, we're stuck with the distractions of a possible war with Syria and Iran, the ongoing wars in the Middle East. That's our response. We all have a choice to make, and we have to make it pretty damn quickly. So it seems.
Let me just remind people of a few things. In April, there's this campaign on Palm Sunday is April 1st, Easter Sunday, April 8th. Those are the 2 days chosen by Occupy the Vatican to take direct action against the Catholic Church. But that's leading up to a whole other thing that's kind of a long-term project. And I'm going to be coming through Europe in May and June. And if people want to get a hold of me and have me come to your area and speak and do help organize these actions, I wanted to let people know they can reach me at hiddenfromhistory1@gmail.com.
That's great. I'm sure somebody will drop that into the chat rooms. We have this combined chat room here in the UWS chat rooms. I'm sure that once she hears this, Karen will drop the URL in. But it's wolfspiritradio.com/combinechats, combinechats.htm. And that's a page that's got all of the United We Strike chat rooms all on one page. How fun that is. I'd just like to remind everybody that we're on the United We Strike multicast marathon. We've been running for God knows how long, since Friday. It seems like one long blur of incredible busyness. I've been driving like a maniac everywhere. It's been quite amazing. I'm here on with Kevin Arnett and Andrew Neil Patterson. Karen's somewhere in the background there. She's being amazingly quiet. It's lovely. resting her tonsils.
Something else.
Go ahead.
If we could talk about is the digs that have started here in Canada, the search for the bones of the children who were murdered in these residential schools. Kevin can talk about that. And also to put out the appeal, if there's any help available, in particular looking for forensic archaeologists, anyone who can assist in a professional capacity with these digs. A bit of a background, we know the location of at least 28 mass graves in Canada the remains of the children who were murdered in the what they call the residential school system. We call them Christian internment camps, and these graves are estimated to contain upwards of 50,000 children, the remains of upwards of 50,000 children, maybe as much as 100,000. And, of course, getting anything done within Canada, anyone in any kind of professional capacity is immediately warned off, scared off. They disappear. And to date, we've had very little success in attracting international attention to the level where we could get somebody on the ground to help with this. So we're putting it out to all audiences. If you are able to, or if you know anyone available, we need some specific help in this regard. And maybe, Kevin, if you want to talk about an update with what's going on with the digs.
Well, the first dig, as I mentioned, started in Brantford, Ontario, on the grounds of the oldest Indian residential school. This is set up by the Church of England in 1832. It went right to the 1970s. We've had eyewitnesses describing burials, seeing children killed. We did a number of initial test digs after finding, through ground-penetrating radar, a number of places where there was massive soil dislocation, in other words, soil dumped on top of graves, according to people who had witnessed it. The test digs unveiled a number of things, including remains of uniforms that were from the school. They were identified by people who used to be in the school. One of the women said it was a common practice whenever they buried a child to put a tree on top of the grave. And sure enough, we dug in an area about 50 yards from the school. We overturned a tree, and in among the roots, we found these buttons, which were identified as having come from school uniforms. We also found bones, and different archaeologists have looked at these. There's no clear consensus whether they're animal or human, but they keep turning up all the time. And in among pieces of charcoal, which we believe were from the school furnace, since it was a common method of getting rid of the bodies. So this is an enormous elephant in the living room of Canada, and yet in the official inquiry, the so-called Truth and Reconciliation Commission, they just had their interim report, not a mention of mass graves, not a mention of children killed. They talk all around the issue. It's an enormous whitewash going on. And so, as Andrew said, we need people to come forward now. It's perplexing to me why people don't come forward and help us in this, because it's all there. People have known for decades that these graves are there, and yet nobody's coming forward with the expertise to actually do the dig and do the analysis, as you would in any mass crime scene. So we need to change that. We're beginning to have a bit of success. In New York, I got a really great response from community media, from some lawyers there. But we're operating on our own. We have no budget. We're just totally self-funded. And we, frankly, are the only people in Canada consistently in the white world who are talking about this. Native people talk about it all the time, but they're not listened to. In the white world, we're treated like
pariahs.
And there's an enormous smear campaign out there on the work we do. But it hasn't stopped us, and it's not stopping the truth from coming out, but we just need more help right now.
In fact, just to keep going, if I may, to help put this in perspective for people, and you can look this one up if you like. After the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver and Whistler, B.C., a dog sled company there, one of the employees was told to lay off the dogs because there was no business, and his way of laying them off was to take a rifle and shoot most of them. And others, when he ran out of bullets, he had to start beating them with the end of the rifle or something. And again, back to the graphic, it's grisly, horrible end for these dogs. And then he buried them. And then for whatever reason, a pang of conscience perhaps, I don't know, but he came forward. Oh, that's right. No, that's right. He was making a workers' compensation claim. He was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. He made a claim.
From
killing the dogs following the orders of his employer. That's right. And
but
so
the outrage in Canada over these murdered dogs, demanding an inquiry, demanding the exhumation of the remains, giving the dogs a proper burial, I thought, my God, this happened to tens of thousands of children, and it's totally off the radar screen, down the memory hole. Nobody cares.
It costs $250,000 to dig up 10 dogs. That's $25,000 per dog to prove a case that was already admitted to. The facts were already admitted to. There was no need to collect any evidence. Here we're dealing with a situation where we're talking human beings, and there is a case to make, and you tell the average Canadian, and they glaze over and say, well, good luck with that. That's it.
Yep.
So there you go, Canada, A husky is worth more than a child, period.
Hi, guys. I have been listening. I want to meet you, Andrew. Thank you for coming aboard. Kevin, great choice in guests today. You guys are rocking the house. JP, thank you as well. And Wolf Spirit, this is, they'd rather dig up dogs than worry about Indian children. You know, wrong color, wrong religion, got to fit into the New World Order, and this all has to stop. So we're glad that you're here. This is the 2012 United We Strike Peace Train. It's March. If you're listening to this, folks, email people out. Email your whole list. Facebook. Get people in here. Next month, 2 days of a strike. The 14th and 15th, stay home or else occupy the Vatican. Occupy your home. If you occupy the Vatican, remember, Vinnie Eastwood says, we got to get rid of the scumbaggery. When you occupy the Vatican, let's get rid of the scumbuggery.
Right. Ow.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Karen. Poor love, she's been up all weekend.
Well, it's my train, you know. Yeah, it's our train.
Yeah, she's driving. She's the train driver, and she can swear if she likes.
You know, that reminds me of an incident. I was speaking in Ireland last year about this stuff, and there was an older woman at the back. We were in Cork, and there was an older woman at the back of the hall kind of glaring at me, and I thought, okay, here it comes. Here's a local Catholic, activist. And she got up at the end, and she said, you know, I think they should take every one of those priests out and castrate them. Those child-raping priests, you know?
That'd be good, too. That would be good. And we've got Tracy, who says that she's not going to the Vatican because she's afraid of those old cross-dressers. Yeah. Another thing. We sit around and watch old men in dresses holding their hands out with other old men and young men kneeling in front of them. We hear all the stories about it. Actually, there was a joke that I heard now, and it's perfect timing for it, and I don't care who doesn't like it. Guy walks by a Catholic church, altar boys out there having just taking a break. Guy looks kind of nervous. He leans down and he says to the altar boy, he goes, psst, psst, you know, I haven't been to confession in years, but I'm wondering what kind of penance they give you for anal sex around here. And the altar boy said, usually milk and cookies.
Well, that's accurate.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, like I say, this law says if that happens, the priest has to cover it up and silence the perpetrator and the victim. They're under obligation to do that and to be excommunicated. So, you know, we had a rally outside the biggest Catholic cathedral in Vancouver a few months ago, and I said that to the people going in, and I said, you know, your priest, even if he's an honest guy, is obligated under papal law to cover up if children are raped in your church. And they had the Knights of Columbus out on front of the steps. Now, get this. The Vancouver police were protecting the church. The Knights of Columbus were assaulting people there and pushing Native people off the church while the police stood and watched. And finally, a Native woman came up to one of these guys and said, this is about children being raped in your church. And she got to these guys. One of them began crying. When we reach people's hearts and talk that this is about children and you shouldn't be protecting child rapists anymore, they don't have any defense against that. And I think we've got to keep doing that.
We do. And right now, Robert Greene is in jail in the UK. JP, you can tell folks more about that.
Oh,
for
yes.
For protecting Holly Grigg.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, okay. So here goes the same. Here's the same story coming in from another place, right? It's really fantastic, actually, tonight to speak to you, Kevin and Andrew, because I've had this side of the story. I mean, I've heard the native elders talk about this, and Tracy with the treaty and everything like that. And I've heard about David Hawkins and Phil McConnell and their Picton Farm expose, which goes so much deeper and so much bigger and so much longer term, because it turns out that, you know, well, we were talking earlier on, there was a guy talking about 9/11 and everything, and we were talking about the Bullingdon Club at Oxford University, and then that brings us to the British political groups. Now, if you look up the Bullingdon Club, if you can get to channel4.com, I think you can in Canada, and watch a film, a program called When Dave Met Boris, or When Boris Met Dave, which is about the young life of Boris Johnson and David Cameron, who's the, this is, we're talking about the Lord Mayor of London and the current Prime Minister, co-Prime Minister, clone thing, who both went to this college in Oxford where there was a club which they called themselves a dining club, but it's basically Nathaniel Rothschild's or whatever sprog of his is currently there. It's their playground, and they have a modus operandi which will become familiar as we go through this story. So what they do is that they're very rich. They're all rich. They all understand this law stuff. They've all been taught how Latin works and how legalese works, you know, from a very early age. They're steeped in it. And so they know how to work the system. They've been shown how to work the system. So the way they work it is that they will hire a restaurant, you know, rent out a restaurant, and make a fight break out after the dinner, and smash the restaurant to bits. Every pane of glass has to be broken. There has to be blood on the walls. This is part of their game rules. There has to be blood on the walls, and eventually the guy whose initiation this is into the Bullingdon Club, this is the initiation zone, whose initiation it is, goes up to the restaurateur and literally throws money at him. Throws loads of money at him, plenty enough to cover in cash, just throwing him loads and loads of money. And then the boys leave and they go on. And
kind of like what we do in Iraq.
Yeah, well, hang on, it's not finished yet, because what they do, and it's like a kind of almost like a financial magic trick. What they do is beforehand they take out an insurance policy on the restaurant, and they claim on that insurance policy because it's been damaged.
Well, you like the World Trade Centers and Larry Silverstein.
You're getting it. You're getting it. Not only the World Trade Center, but we can say Union Carbide's building in Bhopal. We can say the Gulf situation. We can every Gulf situation. We can say the Titanic, even that far back.
Right.
Okay, and it's all to do with lawyers. I'm sorry?
They're called disaster bonds or something, aren't they?
Catastrophe bonds.
Catastrophe bonds.
Okay, and how they work is that this is how, you know, you've got a pension fund, right? How does a pension fund keep itself going? They have a fund manager who puts the money into places where it will make more money. And the way they do that is a kind of gambling situation whereby... for instance, you may be an Air Force. Let's call it. Let's say that we're an Air Force, and we're going to do a military exercise one day. Let's say it's in September sometime. And we're going to do a military exercise, and we need to make sure that any buildings that are damaged during this exercise are insured for. Okay, so this is the proposal that's put out. And in order to make it incredibly unlikely, let's say, you have these qualifications that it has to be, the buildings have to be crashed into by a plane, say, and they have to be leveled to no higher than the level of one story. Which is, that's impossible, you know, because if you demolish a building, it's going to make a pile of rubble big, like five stories. So... you know, it's a completely ridiculous sounding possibility that ever this thing could be triggered, this catastrophe bond. So what they use to fund these things, because this is billions of dollars of money, is that they would take, for instance, the pension fund of the New York City policeman, let's say, and they would be part of the premium that would be held against the building, and so if it was triggered, if this bond was triggered, then they would have, you know, the money would have to come from the police pension fund, and on the other side, if it's not triggered, then the premium comes back, and but the other side is that it's that's the other side of this deal is that that's the fireman's pension fund is gambled against it. So either way, some of them, you know, lose in some way.
Well, yeah, the bottom line is it's all about money. in every institution.
It's partly about money. It's partly about control, because all of these things are like twofers. They're all two for ones. They love their two for ones. In fact, if the more they can get for one, the better. So, for instance, with 9/11, they managed to hide the fact that they had to pay the gold back. They managed to kill off a lot of people who were running investigations, financial investigations, into financial malfeasance. They managed to get great excuses for their Patriot Act. They managed to get great excuses to go into Afghanistan. The list goes on. And all from this single act, which is carefully planned and executed through a series of proxy organizations that appear to be completely disjointed, but they're all arms of the spider. And the spider's arms are roads, and all roads lead where?
Well, it's one of the reasons the Vatican Bank can't be legally audited.
Oh,
you can't know its operations.
The Vatican Bank. Hang on, let's just. There's another one. Recently there was a thing published by this group called the White Hats, which was the list of all the whole account holders in the Vatican Bank, and they turn out to be, for instance, Barack Obama has $2 billion. In the Vatican Bank. Tony Blair has $1 billion. George W.
Well, that's interesting, because Obama's attorney general upheld the position of the Vatican that the Pope is above and beyond prosecution as a head of state. So obviously, yeah. Is that a surprise?
Not at all. So listen, we're at the top of the hour, and I'm just going to play a little piece of music, and we'll be back with Kevin Arnett and Andrew. Oh, look, we've got Tracy as well. We've got Karen, we've got Andrew Neil Peterson, we got Tracy Kennedy, we have Karen Quintostado, and I think even Charlene. So anyway, I'm just going to play you some of my music.
Right.
Nice, calming piece of music. This is called Let's Get to the Heart of the Matter, just after this word from Rebecca.
This is Ever Beyond with JP.
This is the Sons of Arca. The truth will set you free.
Thank you. something to believe in.
You're listening to Ever Beyond with JP here on Wolf Spirit Radio.
And welcome back to Ever Beyond special United We Strike edition with very special guests. Andrew Neil Patterson, Kevin Arnett, Tracy Kennedy, Karen Quintostado, and somebody coming through a door. Great sound effect, guys. It sounded like you really came through a door there.
From the other dimensions, from ever beyond. Someone just entered from ever beyond.
The other side. Yeah. Anyway, so we were deeply down the rabbit hole. We'd taken that red pill. You know, the world has gone into liquid mercury, and we're now looking at the dark underbelly of the government system of Britain and of Canada, tracing that back all the way to the Vatican, and the events that are about to unfold at the center of it all, the very heart of the evil empire, we could say, which is the Vatican City, the state within a state, the Holy See. All these funny little words, the Holy See, you know, it's not even at sea. Maybe they are ruled by Admiralty Law. Maybe that's where Admiralty Law comes from. Of course it does, because they rule all the land and all the sea. And with me now, we have Kevin Arnett and Andrew Neil Patterson, Tracy Kennedy, and Karen Quintostado. And who's ready to go?
Tracy, go for it. We've been talking the last hour. Why don't you start?
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the 408 Treaty?
I can tell you what I was told as a child was what I thought, and you brought that up so eloquently, JP. I thought it was a story that was just a story. I was told so many. My family is Mohawk from Six Nations and Haitian and Sicilian. And I was told this story by my grandmother and thought it was just an allegory that we all came from a different place and we were all one people at one time and we got together. And it was because I thought the story meant it was because we should see each other as family.
Tracy?
That was part of it, but this story...
Tracy, can I interrupt? Can I ask you to tell that story as she told you? Are you able to do it? I mean, we got time.
Sure, if you'd like to hear.
I think it's really important because you've spoken about the story... And you've kind of given us little things, but and you're such a beautiful storyteller. I'd love to hear you tell that story.
This is how the story was told to me many, many times. There was a time before we wrote down tales and only spoke of them to each other by the campfire. Of when we occupied a land, all of us of many colors and many tribes, our people knew that there would be a disaster on this planet and chose to branch out in places they knew would be safe and carry a bit of the story to different lands. But four peoples and a fifth people that I still don't recognize who they are, but a fifth people that lived on air and could go under the water and swim and breathe there, carried a bit of the story in case all of us forgot. We chose and knew that we would separate and said, when the time came and our ancestors or children's 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 would be called to fight together, we would stand. We wouldn't know or remember anymore that we were family. But some of us would have the mark of Isis on our bodies to remember. The mark of Isis was something simple, believe it or not. It's a mole. A mole on your face on the left side of your nose, a mole on your hip. And these people would have ancient memories. And it would come back in a time of trouble. It will happen four times. I was not told how long these times were, how long this was replayed, this story. But I know that Sicilians of all people, and Mohawks, and black people from Haiti, who even that is a long story in my family, fought together at Six Nations Reserve and fought off an invading force of the government that tried to steal all the elders at one time. And this was early 60s, and you can look this up because just before I was born, but happened relatively my lifetime. I was told it happened three other times. I was told I was a mix of these peoples for a reason, a mix that has come to pass that I've found is proven genetically in my line. And that we would all remember and start to fight together. There would be people that we would no longer be talking to that would stand up for us because no one would listen anymore. That we would no longer be bound by this treaty on paper or on stone or on sheepskin. These were the words I was told, sheepskin. But we would all remember, and we would fight together, and know that we were fighting together, and know that we were not separate. When I told this part of the story to Gerald Whitehorse Standing, who is Cree, and Thomas, who is from the States, and on Wolf Spirit Radio. They both got silent for a minute, as men do when they listen to me, and think, oh my God, what did you just say? and told me of this treaty of the 408 and gave it to me and sent it to me. This treaty was written down, not by the people who wrote it, but from a story that someone else was told by their grandmother. This man, who they got the story from, was from the States. There's many people who will say the 408 never existed. It's a story that was made up after the fact. But what really strikes me on the whole thing is it's the same story. It's the same story that someone else was told to remember and pass on. So maybe I could hear it. I don't want to be so bold and insensitive to say that it was made so that I would know someone else knew it, but it came at a time when I was doubting. And it was exact. Even the Treaty of Isis, even the signs on the treaty itself. And the reason why it still holds, not even still holds truth, but the reason why it resonates in my soul is I was asked to inquire on some treaty rights here in Canada. I asked about several of them, and there's a call-in number. It's relatively easy. You can just call. There's basically a book of records kind of place in Ottawa. You can call and ask of these things. I asked for the 408. They kept me on hold for 20 minutes. What they said to me, and I can prove this, is they asked me for a blood sample of this mythical treaty that apparently doesn't exist on paper for real, other than to be made up by people who wrote down the story. So if it doesn't exist, if it's just a story, as people tell stories, why did they want my blood? Why would my blood make any difference? Other than perhaps this is a tale of ancient history, one of the ancient histories that we were not taught. I think it's true. I think there was an ancient alliance. We know for a fact that Native people fought side by side with people from Africa and from southern Italy against the Vatican, against the Roman invading forces in Europe. We know this. We can look this up. I don't know what number war that is. Maybe two, maybe three. Maybe we're in the fourth war now. I have a ring. I have a ring that my grandmother told my father. Actually, my father told me just recently that his great grandmother told him the same story. And he was lucky enough to be alive with all these powerful women that went in his youth. I have a ring that I was told was from these ancient times. It's fairly simple. It's not elaborate. It's not jewel encrusted. It's a small gold ring, fits on my pinky, has an eye basically in the middle. An eye that I've tested this gem, and it's a meteorite. This ring was part of the prophecy.
Wow.
To prove eventually that I am one of these bonders of men, that I can prove a genetic lineage of this planet. I have MS, so I have MS from an outrageous source in a family who's never had MS. So I've been tested for everything known to man. They've had my spinal fluid tapped. They've had blood samples. I'm interesting, apparently, to not just the Canadian government, but world governments have asked for blood samples. I can prove this, too.
Wow, Tracy. That's quite a story.
Some of us are really from here, and maybe all of us talking right now, and maybe some of us aren't.
So your ring is actually a meteorite? It's otherworldly?
Well, I have a gem. The outside is diamond. The inside is unknown.
You'll have to take a picture of it and put it online so we can see it.
It looks like nothing special, guys.
Well, I would like to just look at it.
I'd like to see it too, Tracy.
Okay, I'll just.
She is the keeper of the ring. She is the bloodline. She is Muad'Dib, right? She is Neo. And here she is,
the Lord
on Wall Street
of the
Radio. Who'd have thought, eh?
Here we are.
The Lady of the Rings, yes.
And I can prove that there's another line, because this is what bothers him about my DNA and why they keep asking for my spinal fluid, which I won't do anymore because that hurt. There's something else, too. I can prove there's something else.
Go ahead, then.
I can prove it.
What is it, and how can you prove it?
I can prove it because there's a non-human DNA in my DNA chain. There's a non-Earth-bound DNA with me.
How does it show up?
I wonder where that comes from.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. It's, they call it a mutation. They call it a 2-billion-year-old mutation that makes me bruise easily, basically. It's they're not hiding it, but they say it's non-human and could be a virus that was sent to the planet. Nothing like da-da-da, aliens are among us. But maybe it's da-da-da, aliens are among us.
Or were once.
Or were. 2 billion years ago.
And well, that's what they say, but they don't know that. Could maybe something like maybe 80,000 years ago or something like that. 400,000 years ago. They don't know.
They gave me a date of 2 billion. I went, really? We had genetic tests at that point?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a virus. We've tracked viruses from ice samples for a long time. You have an ancient virus. An ancient virus that has laid claim to my body. It wasn't sloughed off like all the things that don't serve this planet die, but this lives. What
maybe
is it?
Was part, rather than being a virus, maybe it was part of the kernel, you know, to use the computer analogy, that is actually part of the program, the original program. That's what they're identifying as a virus. That's the thing that makes you really special.
They admit that there's a lot of things that fell to this planet. They admit this, you know, meteorites, asteroids, those carried things, non-human, that's alien. Something thrived.
Yeah, that's one story. So
story.
You know, they tell you stories as well. Everybody that was fantastic, by the way. Tracy, thank you very much for laying that one out. Because, you know, it's something that you'd kind of just given little fragments of, but to tell it like
I don't like to tell it. Listen to it. It sounds like, oh, look, there's a sick woman. Call the police.
Okay, Tracy. Let's ask Kevin and Andrew what their take on this whole business is. Guys?
Uh-huh. Hi.
Did you get all that?
Yes.
Yeah, we did.
Pretty interesting. Yeah, it's lunchtime for those guys. So alien DNA, Tracy, if you were gay, you'd be Galian DNA.
I could wear a dress and then check with the Vatican.
Hey, can we...
Yes, your ass holiness.
It's getting late.
Sorry.
Will there be a kind of, racial slurs if you sort of make jokes about aliens? You know, there was this stupid Wookiee. You know, can I say that a Wookiee is an idiot? You know, I'm just joking, but, you know. Like,
ask Tolek.
Well, anyway.
The Andromeda Council has those ray guns. Well, they know where you are.
Yeah. How much does sense of humor extend throughout the galaxy? Let's have a thought. But, Kevin. Your thoughts?
Well, I think... one of our unique things about human beings is a thing in the brain called the limbic system. And I understand that that's not only responsible for compassion and altruism, but also humor. So I don't think the ability to laugh is that common in the universe. I mean, the limbic system was an adaptation that happened to allow us basically to coexist, and it was a survival advantage for people to cooperate together. But... I think there's a lot of wisdom in the things we kind of feel at a gut level, the intuitive, the things that may not make a lot of sense when you're trying to put it into words, but we know it's true at a gut level, right? And so I often don't have to agree with anyone's interpretation or their story or to know that it's true, if you know what I mean. I mean, if it resonates at that level with us, I think there is truth to it.
And
laughter is healing. I know. We're all going for the mute button. Mine doesn't work. Let's jump in at the same time.
Karen,
this
ahead.
Is a memorable weekend. OSMs galore. I think we've had more OSMs. And I don't, Kevin, do you remember what that is?
What is it again?
An OSM?
OSM.
Let's see. JP, what are you
No. It's OSM.
Shiite Muslim moment.
It's an oh shit moment.
Oh.
Thank you, Karen.
Dr. Leo got me started. He was swearing this morning, and I figured that's it. If a man of peace involved in all these over 100 peace activist groups and wrote World Without War, he even dropped the F-bomb. He was so mad at what these guys were doing, and that's what he called them. So
FCC.
He used it as an adjective.
FCC rules need not apply.
So okay, so Kevin is still eating dinner there.
Yeah, that's right. What do you think of it? Well, it's a really nice pie.
We're actually eating some nice apple crisp at the moment.
Apple
I'd like
crisp.
To ask Kevin a question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Why did you pick the place to dig? Did you pick? Who picked it?
There were 9 elders of the Turtle Clan and the Wolf Clan, and they wrote me a letter last year,
Turtle
and they
clan.
Asked.
That's me.
Yeah. And they knew the site was there near the school. A lot of them, the people in the community, they talked about seeing burials. So they're the ones who asked me to come and help work on the site. It had been known for a long time, but they knew that I'd had a lot of exposure and work on this, so they wanted to have somebody from the outside come in and give them a hand. These sites all around the they call it the mosh hole, this school, as you know, because kids who went there, that's all they ever ate, and if they were lucky. And, all around the buildings, on the back of the bricks, kids wrote things, and they're still there. People wrote their names when they were there. There's even a very sad, depiction on one of these bricks, and it just says, "Help me." Somebody wrote that. Last time I was there, somebody erased that. They were scrubbing this off the building. And they've locked away parts of the building now in the basement where we figure there's a subterranean area under the basement where
Sorry,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I was told this too, that it was under the basement that there was the chamber of the burnings, the furnace, basically.
Really?
Yeah, I was.
Was it? Do you know if it was on the side where the girls were?
The girls' room dormitory.
Yeah.
When the girls came in later.
Yeah.
First, it was the boys, but the additional part. Yeah, I heard there was a way to get in. From the area down there.
I'll tell you something that happened when I was just there last week. I was standing there with somebody at night, and all of a sudden we heard what we thought was drumming coming from inside the building. And then we realized it sounded like it was a regular tapping, like somebody on a pipe. And it stopped when we walked away. When we came back later with somebody else, the woman who's kind of psychic put her hand on the building and asked the person to speak to her. It started right away, and it led her along the building and then went back into the center part of the room. And then later the woman got all this pain in her jaw, and she feels there's like a jawbone under there somewhere. One of the little girls was trying to, the spirit was trying to reach out to us. But they've locked up that area now. You can't get in there anymore. And I'm convinced that another psychic who examined the building said she saw a subterranean area where there were priests in red robes actually sacrificing children. And that back in the 1800s and also recently. So, I mean, I think that's all under there. We just have to get in there somehow.
Did you see one red brick?
One red brick?
Yeah, in a room where the floors are, well, they've been done so many times, but was there one red brick still there?
I didn't see it, no.
Okay.
Why is that significant?
I think so. I think it's the way in. I think it leads to the stairs that were later almost walled in, but on the floor.
Somebody also told me that she had a sense that the records of the experiments we were doing on the kids there are kept in the Vatican archives. Because they were using the kids there to try out all sorts of you know, there was like a prototype where they were experimenting on the kids to find ways of using torture to control people. And that had been going on for many years there, is what I was told.
Well, my mom was born in one of those schools out in Nova Scotia.
Shubenacadie. Mm,
that's the one.
Yes.
And my great-grandfather was born Six Nations, and my grandfather as well. And I know those kits were used for, it's almost MK Ultra Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a sense of a place to dig and sent it in. So I wondered, and I know that they uncovered a, it's so hard to even talk about, because we don't, and I guess that's just part of the problem. At first, I have to say, Kevin, I was mad at you.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, as long as we've spoken of this, that no one would listen until someone of the right color decided to say.
Yeah.
And now it's like, now people are listening, like we've been lying for 500 years. But that's not important. It really isn't. The important thing is the word's getting out. People are listening. Whether they hear it for the first time or not, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we hear these stories all around the planet, these same stories. It wasn't just our kids. It was kids everywhere that's ever been by this mass group of invaders that took us all over. Didn't take us over here first. They had to invade Europe first.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't come over here because, you know, they thought this would be cool. They were running from Europe. They were running from it.
You're right.
Why do you run? Why do you go on a boat trip that you may die on in a place that you know you know nothing about, if everything's good at home.
Well, it wasn't. You know, Tracy, my great-grandfather came from Ireland, and his whole family died of typhus on the ship over because they'd been thrown off their land by the British.
Yeah, and they thought it was worth the risk. So, you know, I'm not saying that it wasn't. The people that came over were not the invading force.
Mm-hmm.
We did well at first. We got along at first.
Everyone
I've heard of, even the ancient stories.
Yeah.
Even the cave drawings on walls that are still here in Niagara and Ontario. We did well until, unfortunately, the stuff they ran from followed.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
We were running from the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you're doing a good thing. I'd rather, you know, it'd be one of us, but, you know. Maybe carry them all. Maybe you're one of the ancient tribe. Maybe it's time for you to step up because, you know, there was these ancient stories that we all carry. And we know for a fact out in Nova Scotia that there were people here, tall, blonde, red hair,
mm-hmm.
way before Columbus. There's a tribe still in almost a Kalawit up in northern East Coast for people who don't know Canada. They have red hair still. You got to have some strong genes to break through the native ones enough to have red-headed kids.
Say, how do they celebrate New Year, by the way? Have you any idea?
Who?
This tribe with the red hair.
Good question.
I'll tell you why. Right, I live in northern Scotland, as you're all aware, and where my ex-wife has a house, let's put it that way, where she's got a house, is a village called Burghead, and it's on the northern coast. So if you drove north from London in a very dead straight line, literally as the crow flies, you'd pass through this place, right? And it's like the northernmost part of this island, really, for real, apart from Sutherland, which is almost like a different island. So anyway, this place is an ancient colony from the Vikings, and I may have described it in one of my shows to you, and it was called the Burning of the Clavey, where they run through the streets with a barrel of tar on a pole. And I've been there quite a few times, and I've described it a couple of times on the air. I'm sure I have, and we've got some photographs. And it's an incredibly spectacular thing, and incredibly primal, because in years gone by, until this last event earlier this year, there was no health and safety at all, and everybody would crowd up. So they slept this pole with a barrel of tar on the top. And there's bits of wood that they're throwing in and pulling out and throwing on people's doorsteps for luck. It's lucky to have a piece of the burnt barrel. So they slept this thing through the town. And eventually they get to a little hill. And they have a stone column at the top that they plant. They have a socket in, and they plant the stake in there. And then they throw more and more flammable material on this until the stick burns away, and the barrel rolls down the hill, and breaks up into pieces. And then everybody runs in and grabs a little piece of the wood for luck for the next year. And that's the New Year ceremony. And that sounds awful Viking to me.
I had something I just wanted to ask Tracy.
Please.
You know, when you were saying that more of your people need to care, they do care, they do want to help, but a lot of them around Six Nations have been threatened. I was just there last week, and there's only a few of the original elders who want to go ahead with this now. There have been a lot of threats made, a lot of rumor mongering, you know, the usual divide and conquer things they use. Planting rumors about people and all that. Somebody's been hard at work there trying to split us all up.
True, I'm not allowed back.
Yeah?
I was one of the psychics to say dig there.
Really?
Yeah.
So there are people that are still wanting to work, and I'm hoping we can talk offline about, you know, getting together and doing that.
I would enjoy this conversation.
Okay. I'll be sure to write to you, and we can talk.
Please.
And, you know, I'm so happy that this is happening, too, because I know, Tracy, when you first heard about Kevin, that you were – now I understand.
Yeah,
now you have to be white.
Ran away, basically.
Yeah. But that's my husband tells me we're getting all upset now, the white people, because now we're being picked up and thrown in jail without any rights. But people of color, this has happened to all the time. This is old news, and it's about time that some of us whiteies just decided to wake up and see that the color doesn't make a difference. It's what's inside of us. And I'm extremely happy that you're making this connection, because Kevin just seems to be doing the best work, and Andrew's right in there. And, you know, we're going to make a difference. This is just tremendous. Connecting. United we strike.
United we strike. Diddle, diddle, diddle.
La, 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 la. He lost everything to speak. Whether they hate me or not, I respect that. How can you not? This is a man. He stood up. What can you say? He's done this. It's a good thing.
Absolutely. All kudos to you. Kevin? Are we laughing?
This is,
oh, there we go.
You know, and it's, we've just got to keep at this, because it's, they're doing their best to conceal this every day, especially now that we're at the graves. Now we want to bring these children home. They're reaching out. Every time I go there, I feel them reaching out to us. They want to come home, and now's the time. So this is really a big part of what I do now.
It's true, and they know this ancient tale. They know it. I was told, because there was an ancient alliance, there was a time we stood up together.
Right.
There was a time it happened, and it was a time not that long ago. This was the 60s where it happened. There has to be people who remember this. Now, being mixed, and some of my family that still stays on reserve are very mixed heritage and hated for that. And if we turn against each other, which has happened in every country, every race, everywhere, if we turn against each other, they won.
Yep, that's right.
You know, that simple. They've won.
So, that's not what we want. We want...
Nope.
We want the other things. And it does... I mean, it looks like, you know, that's going to happen. And I think one of the things... it feels like it's going to take ages. But I think because of the way time is moving in this very strange way just now, and it's probably something to do with the sun, and it's probably something to do with wormholes, and it's probably something to do with the way we're thinking and imagining and picturing and recreating the world as we want it to be, rather than as it is, that we're going to be able to allow this beast to finally put its grip around the whole world. It's put its claws all around the whole world, and it's realized that it's so vulnerable from the inside. And I think what we're doing is it's like just poking that sword up into the belly of the spider or wherever we are. And I think that's what the Occupy thing is. So I think we should meditate on the 1st of April and send some maybe help, mental help or. Help me out here, Tracy.
Yeah, some great thoughts for each other, and I could do a meditation if you like.
Yeah, that would be.
Do you want to do that
right now? Yeah, why not?
Sure.
You happy
if
with
you
that,
want.
Guys?
See, they're tacit. Already so in the zone, they're gone.
Tacit agreement. There you go. On your way.
Look, on the 1st, if we make it to the first, I've had Native elders say we're not making it through March, but I hate to disagree, but I do. And we're here. They want us to think we're all going to go. We all should go. We're all bad, bad people. But if we just take a moment, put our feet on the floor, shoes off if you can, breathe in through your nose, out through your mouth, hands on your thighs, close your eyes. Feel your heartbeat. Feel it in your throat, in your heart, in your wrist. Doesn't matter where you get it. Wait till you get it. You'll feel it. Then you'll hear it. Breathe in. Breathe out. Say, ah. Reach out to the planet. Because that's the same beat you're feeling. Reach around the planet. Down to the center of the planet. Feel your feet. Feel an energy pushing from the bottom of your feet down to the center of the planet. Bring that up to the top of your head. Push it out around the planet. Back to your heart. Back to your soul. Think around you. See around you with your eyes closed. Know you're not alone. And that's it. Smile.
That was nice, Tracy. Thank you.
Welcome.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tracy.
Welcome. So. We have believers of God here. We have a man who was a man of cloth for the longest time. The cloth. Interesting title.
Mm.
And a good one. I still think it's a good one. Maybe used for the wrong things here on this planet recently, but still a good thing. You know,
like a man of
ancient times of warrior monk, warrior spirit, protector of the people. What is that but a priest, as they should be?
Or oh, to go back to the movies, he's a Jedi.
Tights under their outfits. That's the spirit or something.
Tracy?
Yes.
I wanted to thank you. It's really good to finally be in touch, and just to share with everyone that my name in Mohawk is Ranaut Shani. I don't know if I pronounced that right, but it means one with a strong voice that warns the people.
Yep.
And so it's good to share that with you, and I hope to sit down and get to know you better when I see you in April.
I would love that. If I'm allowed there, it'd be great. If I'm not, we will talk separately.
Yeah, we'll meet tomorrow.
Enjoy this talk.
Thank you.
Enjoy this talk. I will not step on unholy ground.
Mm-hmm.
If it's been defiled, and you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
because they have allowed now things of money to step in. They've allowed it. That won't help us.
No.
It never has. You cannot embrace the money system and think you'll be saved by it. It's just money.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the feeling people are poor. I understand the whys. I understand the poverty. I understand the oxy friggin' cotton. Mm-hmm. But we can't win that way.
No.
Look at Alberta with the cancers now. Digging up those freaking oil sands. The worst disaster on this planet is happening in Alberta, and no one's talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, well, no, we are talking about it. We're talking about it little ways, couple people. That's how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
They've tried to come get me. Come get me. Please. I already have MS. I cannot be tortured anymore.
You know, that's one of the things that we do have to lose, and Dr. Leo was talking about that too. And I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid at all. I mean, I would not like to have to undergo some horribly torturous death, but I'm not afraid. Our spirit, I believe, we're spirit. We all know we're spirit. We're having a human experience. And since we are spirit, we bring with us all this knowledge that we can tap into once we do go within. And I'm so excited to have met everyone at Wolf Spirit Radio. You guys just rock, you know, and you're bringing out all the psychic sides, the ancient wisdoms, and together with the United We Strike Corps and the evolving shift, even though we had numerous OSMs all weekend, I feel a real kindred spirit, and I think that we've made some absolutely groundbreaking connections this time that we can really parlay into next month and work more closely together to make sure that when we do take action, let's take it on the 15th. Let's support each other regardless of the action we choose to take. Let us be really connected, shoulder to shoulder. Let's find that human link and unite.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you, Karen. My brother in Scotland, what's your name again?
I'm Jeremy, Jay.
Jeremy.
And,
could you write to me, because I'm going to be in Scotland in a couple of months.
I live in northern Scotland,
yep,
near Inverness. Are you going this far north?
I hope to get up to at least Edinburgh, so yes.
Well, Edinburgh is a long way away.
I know, but not by Canadian standards.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine Canada.
I've been to Inverness, so I know where you are.
All right. Imagine Canada, but it kind of shrunk in the oven.
Yeah, we think, you know, a long ways means 4 or 5 days.
Yes.
But in Scotland, that 4 or 5 hours feels like 4 or 5 days. That would be amazing. So I live just along from Inverness, about 30 miles away.
Well, maybe just drop me an email, we'll connect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank Brilliant. You. Thanks, Karen, and all of you for today. It's been great, and I look forward to talking again in April.
Very much so. Thank you. You know, we really are building community here, and it's about all of us. Thank you for introducing us to Andrew.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity to be on the show, and it's going to be a good month coming up. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're Andrew. Welcome. Remember, UnitedWeStrike.com, no matter what issue is pressing on your heart, join us, at least take action the same day, or non-action by keeping your money out, but begin to wake up. Take 15 minutes on the 15th to ask yourself some questions like, why am I putting up with this? Why am I a debt slave? Why are my unborn children debt slaves? And why are so many children who were born into this world buried, mutilated, screwed over by priests that we pray to, that we honor, that we build huge edifices around and conceal? The wealth that's in the Vatican alone should belong to the people, and yet they want you to pass the plate in the poorest indigenous villages all over the world. This hypocrisy has got to stop. The Pope is one of the most evil-looking men out there. He's carrying an upside-down cross and a bent crucifix, and these symbols are right in front of you, folks. You've got to break free of this mass hypnosis. Wake up, reclaim your power, stand with the rest of us shoulder to shoulder, because this empire, this old empire, is crumbling from the weight of its own corruption, and we'll be there picking up pieces, kicking them out of the way as we recreate our own systems.
So,
thank you,
yeah.
Karen. All right.
Go ahead.
Don't make me sing the fish head song.
The fish head song?
Sing it.
What do you mean, don't make me say something? I had no idea that you would even have a fish head song. Let's
put
it
that way. Tracy, it's a great note to end on.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads. Fish heads, eat them up, yum. He wears that hat.
Dr. Demento.
It's a miter. It's a fish head. That's
it
still
is.
Fun. That's not... What religion is that? That's not Christian.
Babylonian.
Jesus was a Jew. I just wanted to say that once. I like saying it because, you know.
And soldiers helped crucify Jesus and walked him up to his death. And if they had refused to obey an immoral order, if they had risen to justice, if they had been the heroes of their own lives, they would have turned around and nailed the Sanhedrin to the cross. They would have nailed the corruption of Rome to the cross, and we would be living free today. And that is the opportunity we have here now. Instead of over 6,000 slaves nailed because Spartacus actually tried to break free, instead of them being so damn mind-controlled that they nailed their brothers and sisters to the cross just to prove they could in a uniform, take off the uniform, step out of that, step back into your life, stand with us shoulder to shoulder. We're on our way.
I am not afraid of men in long dresses that wear tights under it.
Okay. Big move. Tracy has been healed this hour.
I've been healed. Thank you, Jesus.
Hold your hand to the computer screen. Feel the healing. Feel the healing through Skype.
I've been rolling. I've been waiting. No more of those as holiness priests up there. No, your ass holiness. Blow your ass holiness.
It's a miracle. My bald spot just got cured.
We can cure baldness without even a little spray thing. We're heavy here. We are heavy here. Feel the pack.
As I sit here, I can feel my follicles opening like a 1,000-petaled lotus. Little brand new hairs start appearing from my otherwise bald for 34 years head.
I'm always wondering why some of those old guys that have all the hair coming out their ears don't kind of transplant it up a little higher.
You'd wish. Why can't we move hairs around at will? Wouldn't that be a useful facility? Where does the DNA come from that? I'm sure somebody can do it. Any animal on this planet that can move hairs, move follicles from one place to the other, that's how you do it.
I have the power to move hairs. They're mostly running and screaming.
I ran over a couple of hairs last month.
All right, well, we've got to pack it in here.
Yeah, they
got to
go.
Thanks for having us in the talks.
Sorry,
as we degenerate. But wait, I was going to tell you that it turns out, with the time change and everything, we've got an opening next hour as well, and Muggsy is sick, so we'll be here figuring it out.
Good, because flying by the serious chat.
Yeah. So we've got it.
Okay, so we'll play the show out with my usual thingy, and then play something else. Oh, how about some Van Morrison? I think, you know, this has been a bit harrowing. Thank you, Kevin and Andrew and Tracy and and Karen and everybody for joining in this so far, and... It's been quite a busy weekend, I have to say. I've had to. I'm getting a bit rambly now because I've been on the show for too long. Anyway, so I'm going to play the track out. Where the hell is my? Sorry, I can't find it now. I'm going to play the show out with. With
OSM.
This? Yeah, this is OHM. Alright, okay, so let's have this. Now, I'm trying to find. See, I've got the very long playlist of the. Of all the bumpers and everything that is ever used on the station. And I've
lost
my place. Huh?
Fish head song?
Go on, more fish head song, go on.
No, no, I'm not singing again.
Oh, I thought you were going
to
sing.
I like to sing.
Go on, Carrie, you sing us out. Sing us out, go on.
All right.
Here's a song, then.
I sing a song of freedom. I sing a song of peace. We create what we see. It is time to be free. He was a shorty.
It's not as good as the fish head one, but it was lovely.
I found it. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We're going to keep going with something. I'm sure it'll be interesting. I'm sure it'll be harrowing. I'm going to play something rather chilled out after this to calm everybody down. God bless you and good night. Beyond.